Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Pastor Cole, and I just wanted to personally thank you for tuning in to our message of the week. We pray that this message encourages you, it inspires you, and it builds your faith in Jesus. We love you, and we hope to see you in person at one of our services soon. So I want to jump right in, though, and I want to go to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. Fun Bible fact. The Bible is not broken up into, or was not meant to be broken up into, chapters and verses like we have. That's a translation of the Bible to make it easier to read for us. Most of the time, when we see the Bible, the chapter divisions are actually really, really poor chapter divisions. It's almost like it's a weird story type thing, and it's just odd. But I want to show you where movement two of Genesis actually starts. Most people, like if you go to Bible college or whatever, this is just me nerding out for a second, just bear with me. If you go to Bible college, they say that Genesis movement two starts in chapter 12. It actually doesn't start in chapter 12. It starts at the very end of chapter 11. And so I want to start reading this morning. We're going to start in verse 30. This is how Genesis movement 2 starts. But Sarah was unable to become pregnant and had no children. One day, Terah took his son Abram and his daughter-in-law Sarah, his sons, Abram's wife, and his grandson Lot, and moved away from Ur of the Chaldeans. He was headed for the land of Canaan. Everybody say Canaan. Say it like you mean it. Say Canaan. Terah lived there for 205 years and died while he was still in Haran. The Lord said to Abram, this starts Genesis chapter 12. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country and your relatives and your father's family and go to the land that I will show you. It's very important right here. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. One version says, I'll make your name great. And you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you, and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families will be blessed through you. So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. Very, very important. Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. And Lot went with him. Also will be important for later. Abraham was 75 years old when he left Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, and all his wealth, his livestock, and all the people that he had taken into his household at Haran. And he headed for the land of Canaan. When they arrived in Canaan, Abram traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up a camp. This is very important. One version says, there he pitched a tent. That should mean something if you've been paying attention. There he pitched a tent beside the oak of Moriah. That's how you pronounce that in Hebrew. I've been working on that one all week. If you're a Hebrew scholar in here, do not correct me after service. It was wrong. Just let me have my one Sunday of hoping that I was right. And at that time, the area was inhabited by the Canaanites. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, I will give this land to you and your descendants. And Abraham built an altar there and dedicated it to the Lord who had appeared to him. Go to Romans chapter 4. This is what the scriptures mean when God told him, he's talking about Abraham, I've made you the father of many nations. This happened because Abraham believed in the God who brings the dead back to life and who creates new things out of nothing. Father, I thank you for your word this morning. I thank you for who you are to us. I thank you that you are the God who brings dead things back to life and makes new things out of nothing. Lord, speak to us in a way that we can hear you most clearly. Do something in our hearts that only you can do today. In Jesus' name, amen. Jansen, you're good, dog. Everybody give it up for Jansen this morning. If you want notes, you can scan the QR code up there. But Genesis Movement 2, we're calling it Bound by Laughter. And it's going to be really cool. Need to flip this back around here. There we go. So, how many of you remember all of the stuff that we've been talking about so far? That the Bible, every way that we read the Bible, everything in the Bible is, if we interpret it, we can look at Genesis 1 through 11 and we can see that it come from there. The story that the Bible is telling is set up by Genesis 1 through 11. But specifically in Movement 2, in Genesis Movement 2, which is Genesis chapter 11, verse 30, through Genesis 25, through verse 18, you will see that there are some different themes. They're not different than Genesis 1 through 11, but there are different themes that are highlighted in the second movement of Genesis. This is unbelievably important because at this point in the story, we have taken a 1,000-foot view, a million-foot view at the story of humanity. What the Bible does with the story of Abraham is it zooms in to one family. The story of Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Abraham's descendants is the story of Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel spread out over lots of chapters. And you are going to see this as we work through this. But there are themes that you really are going to want to pay attention to over these next few weeks, because if not, you are going to think that the story of Abraham is communicating something that is actually not communicating. And when we read the Bible and when we dive into the text, I've been saying this, and I think it's just good for us to recap this. We have to address the Bible on its terms. The Bible is not on our terms. The scriptures are not written on our terms. They're written when it was written, to who it was written, why it was written to them. All of those reasons, all of those things matter. And if you don't grab hold of those things, you're going to end up, well, with what we've had for the last, well, since the Protestant Reformation, when we messed everything up. So, joking. Kinda. Not really. But you're going to, what's going to happen is you are going to see something in the story of Abraham that makes you go, oh my gosh, we want to be like Abraham. And if you've been paying attention, you do not want to be like Abraham. Abraham's story does not end well. In fact, let me give you a surprise. There's no story in the Old Testament of anyone that ends well. It always ends in a horrific thing happening. It never ends well. But there is something about the story of Abraham. God chose Abraham for a reason. There are redeemable qualities in Abraham. He's the father of our faith for a reason. When we zoom in onto the life of Abraham, there are things that should immediately come to mind. So for instance, let me just throw one out and then I'll talk about some of these for a second. We have Abraham and Sarah, who are descendants of people from Babylon, the Tower of Babel, which will become Babylon. They are the descendants, and the world has literally spiraled into this chaos, and now we're left with a husband and a wife headed towards a promised land. Are you starting to connect things yet? There's a man and a woman headed towards a paradise, right? This is what you're supposed to initially see with the story of Abraham and Sarah. But to understand this story appropriately, So I will say this. The story of Sarah maybe is the most complex story that I have stumbled upon yet to study. There's all of these weird elements. There's all of these weird things. The story of Abraham is not that complex, but the story of Sarah is unbelievably complex. And so instead of just seeing the story of Abraham, I need you to frame this as the story of Abraham and Sarah. It's not just the story of Abraham. It's also the story of Sarah. Sarah's role in this story is almost as important as Abraham's, right? And I'll show you how right now. But first, just so that you have a forewarning, this is going to be 13 weeks after today of walking from what we just read to Genesis 25. That's how much is in there, right? So it's like if you don't like that, if you don't like a slow burn, well, figure it out, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. But there's a couple things that, before I jump in, there's a couple things that you need to see. These are the key themes in Genesis Movement 2. All of these themes, they're in your notes. These were some themes that we talked about in Genesis 1. The main theme through the entire rest of Genesis, not just Genesis 2, but the entire book of Genesis, the main theme is the tree of life. And it's two trees. It's not favor. It's not blessing. It's not family. Even though those are themes. It is not what the Hebrew writers intend for us to see. And I'll show you over the next 13 weeks. But for today, we need to do just a moment of recap. The last messages that I preached, we started with creation and who you are. We got to this story about the two trees. Then we talked about Cain and Abel. Then we talked about Noah, his family, the ark, and the flood. Then we talked about the Tower of Babel. Right? All of you remember all of that good stuff? Cool. So when we pick up in Genesis chapter 11, it starts with Sarah cannot have a child. Okay? That's what we know to start with. She is barren and she cannot have a child. And I'm going to tell you the end of this story, and then we're going to work towards that through all of this. But it starts with Sarah is unable to have a child. Genesis 2 ends with Sarah holding a child in Isaac, whose name means laughter. Genesis Movement 2 starts with Abraham and Terah and Sarah weeping because they cannot figure out why she cannot have a child. And it ends in laughter. This is why I read Romans, where it says, all of this, can we do something with this? This is why I read Romans, where it says, all of this was accounted to Abraham. Abraham is the father of our faith. Why? Because he believed in the God who raised dead things back to life and makes something out of nothing. But how do we get to Sarah holding a child and then Abraham blessing Isaac and dying? How do we get from there is a mother and a father who cannot have a child to a mother and a father who has a child holding it whose name means laughter? How do we get there? Well, I'm going to tell you over the next 13 weeks. But big picture today, this becomes unbelievably important that you see this. We ended being scattered from our cities, right? You remember that last week? We're scattered from our cities. We land in the wilderness somewhere, but with the propensity to want to rebuild our own Tower of Babels, right? Abraham's lineage goes from the scattering at the Tower of Babel, 10 generations, and then you have Abram and Sarah. There is something that there is something very important here that I think a lot of us don't see or we overlook. The story about Abraham and Sarah was their willingness to leave this place, Haran. Right? Haran represented something for them. To Abraham, it was the death of his brother. For Terah, it was the death of his son. And they leave this place, and they start walking towards Canaan, but not without a promise from God. Right? So what do we know about all of Abraham's lineage? What did they want so badly from God? What did they want? When they built the Tower of Babel, what did they say? We want to make our name great. Right? We want to make a name for ourselves. We want to build a tower to God where the whole world will look at us and know they've got something going on. Well, Abraham is in this moment of wrestling with all of this reality that this is what he has been taught from generation to generation to generation to generation. And they stop in what represents grief and pain for both of them. They stop in this place and they settle there. That's what it says. They settled there. God speaks to Abraham while they are in this place of settling. And what does he say? What does he say? Can you throw up Genesis 12:1? So remember, the Tower of Babel is, we want to make a name for ourselves. We want to be famous. That's what we want to do. The Lord speaks to him and says, while he's in this place of pain, leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family. Leave your father's family and go to the land that I will show you. Next verse. I will make you a great nation. Your fathers wanted to make themselves into a great nation. But if you listen to me, I'll make you a great nation. If you listen to what I say, if you start walking towards Canaan, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. I will make your name great. I'm going to make your name great. You won't have to make a name for yourself. I'll make your name great. Right? You won't have to build a Tower of Babel. I'll do that. I will make your name great. I'll make you famous. Right? And you'll be a blessing to others. The promise that God gives Abraham is the reverse of the prayer of the Tower of Babel. Right? We want to build Babel. We want to box ourselves in. And God says, no. So he scatters them. And then he says, I am looking for somebody to do everything that they prayed for, everything that they said that they did not want to be. That is exactly what God was trying to make humans into. And so he's looking for a person who will say, yeah, I'll leave this lineage, I'll leave this family, and I'll go start a new one. It sounds a lot like, you remember when Jesus is talking to his followers, and he says, if you want to follow me, you've got to hate your mother, your brothers, your fathers. All of the ways that you have known previously will not work in this new way. Right? The shift from Genesis 11 to Genesis 12 over these verses is the most significant shift other than when we get to the story of Jesus about his death and resurrection that we have in the Old. It's most certainly the biggest shift in the Old Testament. And because it is such, it's this game changer, what are we supposed to be seeing from this? So all of that was me rambling about what this is. But why is this there? Why are we supposed to see that Abraham left everything that he's ever known. And God gives him a promise. His ancestors prayed for one thing. because they wanted to be protected. And what are we supposed to see when God calls them out of this place? This is where we're at today, towards this. What are we supposed to see? We're supposed to see all of this. And the kicker here, the kicker above everything here, is found in Genesis 12:7, where he says, not only am I going to bless you, I'm going to bless your children. Not only am I going to bless you, I'm going to bless all of your family. We live in a culture. Let me think of a good way to say this. We live in a time where the temptation to be consumed with ourselves is greater than ever. We live in a society that is consumed with itself. And when we start to follow Jesus, God begins to deal with that mentality within us. It no longer is just about me getting blessed and me having my name great and me being made into a great nation. Our faith then becomes about our kids, or it should. When we are stuck in places like Haran, trapped in a culture that really wants you to grab a hold of what Babel is, make a name for ourselves, make our names great, you can never start walking towards Canaan. We do not get a family that starts with a woman who is barren and ends with her holding a baby who is laughing, unless one person starts walking towards Canaan. And you will have to leave this place. This will probably be the most unpopular message that I preach in this whole series. You will have to get over this. Sometimes faith looks like grief in Haran, but other times it looks like grit that moves you towards Canaan. If your faith doesn't go, sometimes it looks like settling in Canaan. The thing about it is Abraham's dad was doing the best that he could. He was walking towards Canaan, but you have to make a decision for yourself and for your family. If you want them to live in this, that's fine. Stay here. But if you want them to walk into all of this, you have got to start walking towards Canaan, even if it means that you have to do it angry, even if it means that you have to do it mad, even if it means that you have to do it with your teeth gritted, even if it means that you don't even like walking that way, it is not about you. The reason we, like somebody, oh Christ in heaven, help. Someone needs to look at our entire generation and say this: get over yourself. It's not about you. This is about your kids and their kids. If Abram never makes up his mind to walk towards Canaan, we never get the story of Isaac. We never get the story of Jacob, and we never get the story of Joseph. And we never get the story of Moses, and we never get the story of Aaron. Why is Abraham the father of our faith? Why are we engrafted into his faith? Why is he that? Because he was a guy who made a decision to walk towards a life that was promised to him by God, even though that he could not see how all of the pieces were there yet. Faith takes some grit. And some of you need to hear that. It is not always going to be easy. In fact, it sucks most of the time. When you don't want to take a step forward, that is when you absolutely need to walk forward. That's when you are on the fringe. And if you see this rightly, and I hope that maybe I should have put one of them scripture maps up here. Throwing it back. You know the ones in the back of your Bible? No, you don't. You ain't never been there before. One of my friends texted me and was talking about my teaching up here. And he was like, dude, it looks like one of those end times charts. And I was like, dude, them people make a lot of money and they rip a lot of people off. So if y'all want to make charts out of these and sell them, we'll build a new building, baby. You've got to make a decision to start walking towards Canaan. Is it going to be easy? No. I'm here to tell you, it's not going to be easy. Katie's over here looking for the maps in her Bible. She's over here trying to find the maps in her Bible. Let me help you. Here's a very important note here. Do you remember how we're supposed to see the world? As a temple. That's right, Jake. Man of God. But more of a three-tiered world, right? Heaven, earth, below. And specifically, not hell, heaven, earth, and below. It's not about that. When we see this happen, when we see this three-tiered world, this three-tiered structure, you are going to see almost every journey here going forward, there being something that looks almost like this, and you can't see this, but I drew this up here for myself, not you. So you are going to look, and you are going to see this journey, this Tower of Babel, and there's going to be another piece of land, which represents Iran, and there is this place that every one of you need to make yourself familiar with, and it's called the wilderness. And it's always right before you get into Canaan. It's always coming out of a life that you once had in the transition to a life that you want. There is a place that you will go through every single time called the wilderness. Jesus walked through this. You're going to walk through it too. And your decisions when you get into the wilderness will determine that if you end up back here or in here. Right? You remember what else I drew up there like that? The Garden of Eden. That's right, Jake. Jake, are you trying to like get hired here or something? Jake's like, I've been paying attention, dog. You remember what else I drew like this? We have Eden, the land of Eden, the Garden of Eden, and the Tree of Life. Well, when you think about this, what's right here? That's the Garden of Eden where the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is. You will always have an opportunity to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil right before you make it to everything that God promised you. You'll always have that opportunity. It will always be there. It, like, literally, we're going to see it later. We get the very first glimpses of it in Genesis 12, where he says, Abraham goes and he pitches a tent under a tree on a hill. If that doesn't ring Eden bells for you, I don't know what you're supposed to do. He goes and he pitches a tent. That's the tabernacle. That's the first step. He's on top of a hill, outside of all of the stuff going on around him, under a tree. And then we're going to see that Abraham, every time that he sets up camp somewhere, he always does it in a forest. Specifically, not in the wilderness, but around a bunch of trees. And we're going to track that all the way through. But listen, that's not the point of this. The point is, what is happening from Genesis chapter 11, verse 30, through verse 25, which ends with Abraham dying, laying hands on Isaac, and blessing him. This whole story is God getting Babel out of them. It's not just enough to be out of Babel. It's not just enough to be out of what you are currently in. It's not just enough to be out of Haran. And Abraham knew that. That, yes, we've been scattered from what my fathers told me, that we were trying to build a name for ourselves, we were trying to make our name great, we were trying to build this awesome nation, whatever. Abraham knew that it was not enough just to get out of something. It's not enough just to get out of sin. It's not enough just to get out of sin. The goal is not to get out of sin. The goal is to be one with God. Let me tell you where we went wrong with this. We in the church, for as long as I can remember being in the church, what do we call people who live one way at church and another way a different way? Hypocrites. Yeah, right. Yes. We call them hypocrites. The problem is, I think that is a poor way to describe hypocrisy, especially as it pertains to the kingdom of God. Hypocrisy in the kingdom is not that you're one way at church and one way at home. Hypocrisy in the kingdom is, how are you not like Jesus here, and how is Jesus here? Holiness is not about you living one way here and living one way there. It's you becoming like God. Right? And let me make this abundantly clear. You shouldn't live a different life. You shouldn't live a double life. You shouldn't have to hide things from people. You are as sick as all of your secrets. You are as sick as all of the things that you have to hide from people. So can I do this and do this? I don't know. You need to ask God. But you need to listen, and you need to listen closely. Just because everybody else is living wonderful lives here doesn't mean they're whole. They're out of Babel, but they're not whole. They're sick. And they're not walking in wholeness yet. There is a complete difference between you being out of Babel and in Canaan. And it looks like you being gritty enough to take steps towards Canaan, even if it means you leave everything that you've ever known behind. Some of your lives need to get real boring. They need to get real boring. I told you this is not going to be a fun one. But this is not about, well, we got out of what we used to be in. You've got to get into something else. Everybody knows you got out of what you used to be in. You told us all on Facebook. We got it. We get it. You're out of it. We got it. You hate everything about the way that you were raised. We get it. We know. Great job. Keep walking towards Canaan. There are some ways that you were taught and raised that you need to let go of. But letting go of them, letting go of those things is not what you're looking for. People who just let go of things and never grab on to anything else are literally always stuck here. They're always stuck here. Always. They never walk in this. And you know where your kids will die? They'll die right there with you. And I don't want my kids to die here. I'm not building a church where the kids die in Haran. I'm not building a church where the kids are attracted to Babel. I'm not building a church where Beckham walks in and he's like, I can't tell if they are they in this thing or not? I never want that to be a question. And he probably will, because he's a little bit judgmental right now. We're working on that. Told me that his friend at the gym wasn't a man of God. He took his toy away. Yeah. He gave him, listen, this is what happened. I pick him up from the kids thing at the gym. He's like, man gave me toy. He man of God. Friend took toy away. He not man of God. It's like, well done, son. I wanted to be like, why'd you let him take your toy away? We've been practicing jujitsu at home for this reason. Go get your toy back, big dog. He has a little jujitsu dummy. My kid's going to get in so much trouble at school. God. And it's going to be all my fault. and I'm going to own every bit of it. I cannot wait to get a call one day. It's like, Beckham's been messing up. And I'm like, of course he has. It's my fault. That's probably some like trauma response from my childhood or something, but you know, it is what it is. You good, big dog. So you got to figure out how to walk towards Canaan, even when it hurts. The story, Abraham and Sarah's story, is summed up in that verse in Romans, that all of this, like Abraham's faith, was summed up in that he believed that God raised the dead back to life, and he brought something out of nothing. That is the story of Abraham. And the only way that he knows that to be true is that he started walking towards Canaan. Abraham would have never seen the faithfulness of God in the way that he was promised if he did not make up his mind to start walking towards Canaan. Listen, some of you have promises from God. Some of you have promises from God that you can see if you'll just walk towards Canaan. Some of you have things about your life that you want to change, and you don't know how to change them. Well, it's not just rejecting Babel. It's walking towards Canaan. This whole story right here of 11:30 through 25:18 is a whole story of repeated failures, but people who had the faith to keep going. Faith, let me say this. Faith is not God's going to do a miracle. That's not faith. God only does miracles. Duh. Faith is when you cannot see that God is a miracle worker and you keep walking anyway. That's faith. Faith is the result of a life of faithfulness. You can have great faith when you've seen God be faithful. But there is an element of this that I think sometimes we miss. God is not going to come and snatch you out of Haran. You want God to drop a miracle in your lap. And sometimes you need to learn how to celebrate just taking a step towards Canaan. The miracle is you were breaking generational curses off of your family by just one step at a time. One step at a time. That's the miracle. The miracle is your kids don't have to be raised in a house like you were raised in. But it requires you to take these steps because God is doing something when you are stepping towards Canaan that you cannot see. If the disciples don't drop everything that they knew and start following Jesus, when Jesus says, if you cling to your life, you're going to lose it. And if you give up for your life for my sake, you're going to find it. If they don't drop everything that they know and start following Jesus, we do not get the new community in the book of Acts. Do you think it was cool for Peter to give up his job? He was a professional fisherman making a lot of money. And Jesus goes to him and says, drop everything you know and follow me. Now, I'm not telling any of you to quit your jobs in here. Unless you, Tom, yep, Tom, except you, Tom. Tom, quit your job. Tom's like, man, I really want a word from God to quit my job. But you've got to start walking towards Canaan, and that will cause you to resist this. With every step that you take towards Canaan, the spirit that was in that was at the Tower of Babel is falling off of you. It's not about being trans-relocated from here to here. It's not that. That's not what this faith is. It's about walking out of this and out of this in this direction. And here's the thing. When you decide to do that, I heard a story yesterday that sent me into an oblivion. I'm not joking either. I heard this story yesterday of this guy who, shocker, is a Calvinist. Heard this story of this guy who, when his kids do something wrong, he seriously looks at them and says, "God's not pleased." Kids are like 6. You know what that is? Do you know what that is? I've got to pause before I actually say what it is, because I have a lot of things that I think it is. But it's a person who's wrapped up in this. It's a person who doesn't know that God is pleased with him, and he projects everything onto his kids. It's a person who does not know God, and now he projects the God that he does not know onto his children, and they will grow up having been spiritually abused. So why is it important to walk towards Canaan? Because you need to see God take nothing and make something out of it, and you need to see God raise dead things back to life. You need to be able to tell the stories of God's faithfulness. And if you will walk towards Canaan, your name will not be great, but your kids will. And your kids, and it will not feel like that your name's being made great when you're walking towards Canaan. But your kids will tell the stories about moms and dads who said, "I do not care. I am going to be gritty about this and walk towards Canaan." We get the story of Abraham from his sons and grandsons, not from Abraham. Abraham's kids made his name great. Why? Because the promise to Abraham was not that I'm going to give you Canaan. It was that I'm going to give your descendants Canaan. And faith means walking towards a place you know that you'll never get to as long as your kids live there. That's what faith looks like. Faith looks like walking in a direction of healing that you may never get, but your kids will never experience the pain that you experience. So this zoom in onto the family of Abraham is about how God picks a family. And he says, "I'm going to bless the world through them." And then we see in the New Testament, in Galatians, Paul's writing in Galatians. Here's a bone for all you Israel dispensationalists. I had to give you one. I went at the Calvinist already. I got to go at somebody else. I got to give them a break. God blesses Abraham. We are the descendants of Abraham, but more importantly, we are the descendants of Jesus. In Christ, God blesses the whole world. Through Abraham, God blessed Israel. Jesus is our better Abraham. Because it's not about a certain people group being blessed. It's not about God favoring a certain group of people. It's about God blessing the entire world through his son, Jesus. And if you see this, and we're going to get into all of this, and this is just the introduction to this. If you see this, Jesus is the firstborn among many brethren. The firstborn among many brethren. Jesus is our big brother. God chooses Abraham, goes to Isaac, and then Jacob. And he chooses all of these brothers to bless the whole world. You even see the picture of this in the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph. Joseph may be my favorite story in the whole Bible, by the way. But you have got to get it in your mind that you are going to walk towards a land and walk towards a place that you may never not get to. You may never get to it. You may never be made fully whole. You may never get over what happened to you. But your kids will not have to live with that pain. And when we get to the end of movement two, what do we have? We have a woman and a man who could not have a child holding a baby who laughs, whose name means laughter. This story starts literally in a place of grief. And this whole journey to here is about being bound up with laughter. It's about God doing, being faithful over and over and over and over and over again. And so we start with movement two, a woman who's barren, cannot have children. And a dad whose everything that he has stopped. When it says that God brings something out of nothing, it's not, when you go look at this genealogy, this is a scope, this is reduced, this is taking the million foot view that we had with Eden and it's reducing it down to like a 1,000 foot view. And it's saying, now this is humanity. This is the world. Well, there is no hope for humanity if the people who God has chosen to bless the world through their kids can't have a baby. But that gets changed over time. And maybe Isaac showed up just at the right time. Maybe Isaac showed up just at the right time for Abram and Sarah. And I think it's so, so, so important that you see that walking towards Canaan is about God's faithfulness on his timeline. We want everything and we want it now. But if God gives you some things now, it's going to turn into this. You're going to take everything that was supposed to be here and take it back here. Can I give you just a good example? This is called maturity. This is called growing up. God does not give you some things because it would kill you if he gave them to you. Why isn't God blessing my life? Because he cannot trust you with that. I don't give Beckham the keys to my car. I don't let Beckham go and play on the playground by himself. He cannot handle that yet. But the way that you get to do that is you mature. You walk towards Canaan. You walk out of all of this. And the first step is you've got to take a first step. You've got to start walking. You've got to leave everything that you've ever known behind and start walking. Let me ask you this. If some people looked at your lives, if they just examined your lives, a stranger just examined your life, what do you think they would say? The appropriate response is, well, I don't care what they say. Get over yourself. Be a Christian. Well, I don't care what a stranger thinks about me. Well, you're called to serve them, so you should. It becomes so problematic when we take on the spirit of Babel. And we say, we're going to do everything to make ourselves great. And if people don't like us, well, they can just get over that. I'm so tired of hearing Christian leaders say that. My God, it has sent me into an oblivion. I saw a Christian leader say, well, if you don't like it, just unfollow me. Well, I will. Unfollow. I don't like your attitude. No problem. Unfollow. I be hitting people with that unfollow button all the time, son. One after the other. The problem is, with that spirit, somebody that's coming after you is going to get that spirit. And God's plan is to bless the world through all of our descendants. And God's going to use people who are happy about that, who are happy about being called to that. God's going to use people to bless the whole world who want to be a blessing to the whole world, but also have the ability to get over themselves. My life is not about me. I have a wife and I have a child. It's not about me anymore. It's about being sure that my kid never goes through the pain that I went through. And I have to start walking towards Canaan to do that. And some people are too prideful to take this first step. You're too prideful to do it. Because you don't think that you need to step towards here. Some of you are too prideful to go to counseling. Too prideful. You're too prideful to quit your current job and get a new one that serves your family better. Too prideful. It's just pride. At the end of the day, it's just pride. It's that my life is about me and myself and not about my kids. And that's not the way that this life is meant to be lived. We're going to be a community that takes steps towards Canaan. We're going to be a church that takes steps towards Canaan. And luckily, you have other people walking towards Canaan with you. That's the beautiful thing about this. Because of one man taking one step, now we all can walk together towards Canaan. This is not about just you doing your thing. This is about us walking together towards a land and towards a place that God has promised us. Not as Resting Place Church, but as Christians, as believers. It's about leaving all of your brokenness behind and walking towards wholeness. Do not let pride keep you from taking this step. Do not let your ego get in the way. Ego is the number one killer of marriages. It breaks up families. At the end of the day, can I give you, it's almost Valentine's Day. Can I give you a little thing about marriage? Marriage is about you dying. That's what it's about. Marriage is a literal you know, marriage is a sacrament. It is sacramental in the church. What does it represent? You giving up your life. You dying to yourself. Anna has implemented new rules at the house about cleaning. I'm following them. That's killing me. It's as simple as that sometimes. Wife does it like this. She does like that. Just do that. It's much easier. Can I throw another nugget in there? A lot of times in the church, I will get calls from guys, and they're like, my wife has lost her mind. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's Jordan. Jordan calls about once a week. Katie's going off the deep end again. And it's like, I don't know what to tell them because I don't know the whole situation and I don't hear both sides of the story, but I always hit them with, are you giving up your life for her as Christ gave up his life for the church? Are you serving her in a way? Well, I can't get my wife to follow me anywhere. It's probably because you're not serving her. Maybe she doesn't want you to lead. Maybe she doesn't want you to lead the home. They also have to die to that reality. When we find ourselves in this story, this is about God taking dead things and bringing them back to life. And it's about him taking nothing and bringing something out of it. You can stand to your feet. Jansen, you can come on up. When we see this story in its fullness, and when we see it one day in its fullness, you will see that the same way that God goes into the womb and heals Sarah is the same way that Jesus goes into the womb of the earth and heals us. These stories are pointing to a future day in Jesus. The Old Testament, all of it, is pointing to a time to come. So when you are working your way through these stories over the next few weeks, these stories, all of these, look for this theme. He is the God who takes dead things and brings them back to life. He is the God that takes nothing and brings something out of it. And in the end, this all ends in laughter. It all ends in a celebration. It starts with grief. Grief. Here, sorry. The second step to this is the grit to take a step towards Canaan. And it literally ends with her holding Isaac in gratitude. If I could sum up this life of faith for you, this faith as a whole, it's grieving, it's gritty, and it's gratitude. And you have to get comfortable with all of those things. You have to get comfortable because there's going to be times in your life where you're grieving. There's going to be times in your life that requires you to be gritty. And there's going to be times in your life where you just need to stop and give God thanks. You just need to stop and laugh because of what he brought you out of. Can I give some of you a prophetic word this morning? Relax. That's it. Another prophetic word. Stop taking yourself so seriously all the time. Laugh a little bit. Have some fun. Don't go sin to have fun. But have fun. Laugh. So over the next 13 weeks, we're going to walk through all of this. Today was just an introduction. But it's to get us stepping towards Canaan. It's to get us walking towards Canaan. So next week, we're going to go into a little bit more of what happens with Abraham and Sarah. And so it's going to be good. Invite all of your friends. Get back here next week. We're going to go on this journey. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but I'm liking it so far. And I hope that you are as well, learning to read Genesis in this kind of new light, in this new way. I've got lots of stories and testimonies so far of people saying, like, I'm seeing Jesus in this text like I've never seen him before. And that's our goal in all of this, is for us to see Jesus more clearly. So I love you. Thank you for being here this morning. There are going to be some people come forward if you need prayer for anything. I've said this week after week after week, continue to say this. If you need healing in your body for any reason at all, there's going to be some people down here that are praying with you for healing in your body. But if not, I'm going to bless you, and then we can be dismissed today. Father, I thank you for everyone in the room. Lord, I pray that your blessing would be upon them. I pray that they would.